This is firefighter Raphael Porriette for Firehouse Subs. Introducing new Firehouse Pairs. Pair your favorite small sub with a signature side, like the awesome 5-Cheese Mac and Cheese. And remember, a portion of every purchase at Firehouse Subs goes towards helping first responders. Firehouse Subs. Enjoy more subs. Save more lives. Participating locations only. Firehouse Subs would donate a minimum of $1 million in 2019 to the Firehouse Subs Public Safety Foundation by donating 0.11% of every purchase.
Welcome to the Sheridan Report, brought to you by MyBookie.ag. To find out more about MyBookie.ag, go to thegruelingroot.com. Go to the top of the page. There's a banner, MyBookie.ag. You click that, and it'll give you up to a $1,000 cash bonus on your first deposit. I am your co-host for the Sheridan Report, Mike Goodpasser. And right now, I would like to welcome in my co-host from the Sheridan Report, Bobby Sheridan. How you doing, Bobby?
I'm doing okay, Mike. And I listened to a little bit of your guys' draft show this morning, and when I was doing some stuff, I had it on in the background, and sound like you guys are ready to go for your Thursday draft.
Yeah,
your live draft show.
Yep, Thursday night live draft show. We'll start with the first pick. I think it's either 7 or 8 o'clock Eastern, but you can hear that on thegruelingtruth.com. You can also hear that on Spreaker Live, and you can send us messages through Spreaker or at Grueling Truth. And also, we will be live on Zeno Live Radio the whole wide world over. So make sure you check us out there, and you can go to iTunes, download the Grueling Truth app, and listen to the show live that way also. All right, let's get started. Major League Baseball, baby. What you got?
Well, here's what I got, Mike, and we're hoping for better results today. You know, I was driving home yesterday. I went and watched a high school baseball game, and a friend of mine's son was pitching, and I was driving home, and man, the first reports I got, we're winning 4-1 with the Pirates and 3-1 with the Royals, and the Pistons are up by 9 almost at halftime, and I'm like, wow, I mean, we're up to a great start, and I love the two late games, so I think, okay, we might sweep this card. Well, that just goes to show you, you know, you never know, because it wound up the reverse sweep. You know, the Pittsburgh blew the game, Royals blew the game, Detroit blew the game, Pistons, and the two late ones didn't come through, and it's one of those days. And, you know, it's like a bad horse race. You draw a line through it, and you get going again, Mike. So
it's a new day, Bobby, so give us something good.
Here's where we get going. You know, we got the Giants tonight. Last night on the report, when I made the report, they were +111, and they're down to +103. And I like this spot because we've got a pitcher that's been throwing strikes and really moving the ball and getting ground balls, and that's Samardzija for the Giants. He's been throwing the ball well and giving them opportunities to win. And, you know, I predicted that their offense would get off the mat a little bit on the road trip, and there's, you know, they have in some ways, not fully the way, you know, as much as I wanted them to, but I believe going to Toronto, you know, a good hitting ballpark, somewhat like when they got their series started in Washington, I believe they're going to score some runs, and the Giants bullpen is still one of the best in Major League Baseball, and I think they're going to get this one, Mike. They're started +111, they're down to +103, so they've gotten a little bit of the action, and I really like this game. It starts at 7:07 Eastern, 4:07 Pacific. I like the Giants over Toronto. And then the day off's going to do them a lot of good, too. And I'm going to throw one more thing in there. And this is the first time I've mentioned this. Teams that come home after long road trips, the real game you got to be careful, a very dangerous game, is the first home game after a long road trip. So I like to bet against teams playing their first game of the homestand. And that's Toronto. So we like the Giants tonight.
All right. What else we got?
What else we got? Well, we got another straight play. This is a couple more handicapping factors. I like the Phillies tonight. And when I made the sheet up or the report last night, they're +125. And as I'm finding them now, they are what? They're playing the Mets. They are +119. So they've come down a bit too. And the angle here is this. We've got two teams that have some injuries right now in the lineup. The Phillies lost a couple of their outfielders they've made some changes there. And then the Mets yesterday lost a couple players for the last couple of days, Robinson Cano being one, and and McNeil being the other. And that's two big bats, left-handed bats in their lineup that they could be without. So you have both offenses maybe a little less effective tonight as they should be. But the key to the game, as always, is going to be on the mound. And here's the deal. You got Zach Wheeler of the Mets against Zach Eflin of the Phillies. These two teams played each other last week in a series, and the Phillies saw Wheeler. He pitched in the series, and he was he had mixed results. He did not throw that well. He hasn't thrown that well. I mean, I think that was a bit of an improvement for him that day, and I'm going to give you his numbers right now. I'm going to pull them up. His last game against the Phillies, he went 7. He gave up 5 hits, 3 runs, 5 Ks, 3 walks, so a pretty good outing. He has been struggling with the base on balls a bit. He's had 13 walks in his last 3 outings. The fastball velocity is high, but he's not. The location is average. Now, here's the key to the game. The Mets did not see Zach Eflin in that series. So Eflin's going to be a new look for them. And his last start was against Colorado, at Colorado. Tough. And he gave up 2 earned over 6 innings. I watched this game quite extensively, and I like how he's throwing the ball. So I think the pitching matchup, starting pitching edge, will go to the underdog Phillies, and I think that they'll be able to hold on to this game. So I like the Phillies at the underdog price. That's my other play on the report. We added a play, and especially if the Red Sox win game 1, I really like it. The Red Sox are winning 2-1 going into the bottom of the 4th right now live. I just looked it up. And the game I like would be the Tigers to bounce back in game 2. And they're throwing they're throwing Spencer Turnbull, who's a new name on the scene, who's got really, really good slider and good fastball. He came off of a really good outing against the Pittsburgh Pirates where he gave up only, I believe, 2 hits over 7 innings. I think he got a no decision that day, but there were rave reviews about him after that start. And I think he could back that up today against the Red Sox offense that's been spotty and starting pitching that's improving, but overall very spotty. So there's also the angle of the playing for the split. You know, there's very few sweeps in the MLB, and that's been a longstanding betting tool to use, that you just bet the opposite of what's happened in the first game. So that would give us some more ammunition there. Good value tonight on that game. I like the Tigers to get the split with Spencer Turnbull, and that's if Boston wins the first game. And if they don't, I'll still bet Detroit and just lower my bet just a little bit. So that's the 3 straight plays, man. And let me give you the mix and match plays, the 3-team parlay, which has been very unsuccessful so far. We've had a hard time hooking up 3 favorites, 3 valued favorites, that is. And we've hit 2 out of 3 quite a few times. And, you know, so when you hit 2 out of 3, you can still make some money when you're mixing and matching. And so until we get hot, let's look for that. But there's 3 games that I think you can look at, and that's the Indians at 3 o'clock Pacific. That's with Carrasco coming off his best outing of the year. That's a pretty big favorite, though. They're minus 200. But then we get 2 real reasonable favorites, the Padres and the A's. Those are 10 o'clock Eastern, 7 o'clock Pacific starts. The Padres and A's, I like to take both those games tonight. So there's your baseball. Bobby.
So do we want to move to the NHL now? Because we have a huge game 7 tonight, actually a couple of them, but one's bigger
than
others.
I do, Mike. I want to move to the NHL, and I'll let you take the throne here to start with.
Yeah, we've got the Toronto Maple Leafs, who have not advanced to the second round of the NHL playoffs in over a decade. And in 2 previous occasions during that decade, they've been knocked out in Game 7s by the Boston Bruins. Tonight, we got Game 7. Game 6, the Maple Leafs lost at home. And when I look at this, I mean, I think Boston really simplified its game. They shot the puck, put pressure on Toronto. They did basically what had them come up with 107 regular season points. And you also look at the home ice advantage. The Bruins were 29-9, 3 ties at TD Garden this year. And I think what this will come down to is a special teams battle, as the Bruins have taken advantage of power plays against a leaky Maple Leafs penalty kill this entire series. They've scored on 7 of 16 chances, 43.8%. And I think the big question here is whether Toronto can stay out of the box, or barring that, can they find a way to contain Boston's power play? And I know we've talked about this before, and my take at the start of this series was the Maple Leafs in 7. I'm going to stay with my take. I think the Maple Leafs get this done tonight. I think all of Toronto is holding their collective breaths. trying to see if this team can finally get over the hump against Boston in a game seven. And I think they just need to go out. They need to vanquish these ghosts. They'll be playing in a building that has given them nightmares over the last few years. I think they need to ignore the past, focus on the future, and winning this one game could set the Maple Leafs up to maybe make a deep run here.
Well, Mike, I agree with you very much. I mean, the Maple Leafs have already won two games in this series at Boston. So this team's getting off that plane knowing they can win the game. And the fact of a game seven, what's the tradition? You know, that I don't think the referees, unless they really have to make a call, I think they're going to let some of the little side stuff go, let these guys play it out. And so maybe the penalty won't be as much of a factor tonight in this game. And look, we've already cashed once by being right on our take. We said that whoever won game three was going to win this series. I said that. I was very strong with that. And when it got to game five, that gave me the winner on the Maple Leafs because, you know, the game five winner has a huge edge, 90% to win the series, something like that. And they won that series. They won that game at Boston. They were plus 125. Well, I thought they'd come home and win at home, but I passed on betting it. And you know what? They lost that game. So now it gives us another betting opportunity in a series that we called weird. You know, we used that. I think you used it first, Mike, and I agreed with you. You said it's been a weird series. And it has been a weird series because nothing really has played to form in terms of the teams haven't won at home when they've had opportunities. And I think it continues. I think the Maple Leafs will win this game tonight. They'll find a way. This may even go to overtime.
I think Toronto wins the game 4-3. We've also got the Vegas Golden Knights tonight in game seven against the San Jose Sharks, which I think this has been kind of a weird series too. I think these teams are fairly evenly matched. It's minus 110 for both teams going into this game. So my question to you, Bobby, is this. On the value, if they're both minus 110, would you lean towards the home team? Because I think the Knights might be slightly better, and I think I may like the Knights here, but with an even matchup, money line-wise, do you go with the Sharks because they're the home team?
I do like the Sharks tonight, Mike, and I'll kind of tell you why. You're right. Vegas is probably ranked higher because, you know, when they've been at home, they're 170, 180. And then they come to San Jose, and it's more like 120, 110, 125. You know, so the Vegas Knights have had a stronger feeling, at least from the Vegas odds. And they came home and had a chance to win this thing, and they failed. You know, it was 3-1, and they came home for game five. And the San Jose Sharks won that game. It was a very disappointing loss for Vegas. That made it 3-2, correct? Or am I off by a game?
Yeah, I think so.
I may be off a game, but bottom line is Vegas had a chance to win this series at home, and they missed the opportunity, right? And
yeah.
So they go the San Jose Sharks. The guy, oh, yeah, then San Jose guaranteed. Yeah, this is 2-3-2. Is that correct? Is that what's messing me up?
2-2-1-1-1.
It's been a 2-3. It's a 1-1-1. Well, somehow I'm not figuring it out. I know Vegas had a chance to win this, to close out this series, right?
They were last game they had a chance at home to close out the series, and I think they lost in overtime.
Oh, there you go. Okay, yeah, they lost in overtime. So, but when San Jose, when they made it 3-2, that's it. When San Jose at home made it 3-2, after that game, one of their defensemen, I believe, was getting interviewed after the game, and he said, "We're going there, and we're going to win it. We're coming back here." And he was right. I mean, he put it out there, and the crowd went nuts behind him. He was riding the emotions of that, you know, big win that they had in game five. And by golly, they didn't go to game six, and they won that game at Vegas, which was a very big home arena, home ice advantage. You know, for them, Vegas was a big favorite in that game, 180, and San Jose pulled that out.
Yeah, and what brings to mind for me is the last time I remember that happening was in 1994 when Mark Messier, before Game 6 at New Jersey playing the Devils, guaranteed that they were coming back and they were going to win in a Game 7. Then Messier had one of the games of his life to help lead that great win by the New York Rangers, which led to them beating the Vancouver Canucks in 7, which gave the Rangers, I think, their first Stanley Cup in like 54 years, something like that.
Well, you know, if you can go and get it done after guaranteeing it, I mean, that's pretty good. So, I mean, I think San Jose has got an opportunity now to to do that. And I, you know, Mike, this was an easy one for me. You know, this is an easy one. Toronto, straight bet, and then a parlay with the San Jose Sharks. And that, and to me, I, that's an easy, easy way to play that. I don't look into it any deeper than what we've just talked about. I think the momentum's with San Jose, and they're coming home. Vegas failed in their opportunity to close it out, and as did Toronto. But this series, to me, is setting up for another Maple Leafs upset.
All right, Bobby, very good. What about the NBA tonight?
All right, the NBA, we're continuing to rock and roll in these series. And there's, you know, Utah gave us a little bit of drama last night. They came through, and that's why we stayed away from that game. You know, we said pass that game because that was, you know, an opportunity maybe for Utah to play one big game and hit some shots at home and get a nice win. And that's why we weren't going to play the team that we know is going to win the series. And we save money. I mean, sometimes your best wins are your non-plays, you know, and you got to remember that. And so we save some money there, even though we like Houston in the series still. And so we're going to come at tonight. And this is, you know, we've got 1-2-3 series sitting at 3-1 and then 1-2-2. So of the 3-1 series, I'm on one game. And the one game I like that I think will win and cover is Philadelphia 76ers. I think this series is over. They went down to Brooklyn and won those two games. I watched the games. Brooklyn is dominated inside by Philadelphia. And so this really comes down to the gritty, scrambling defense, hard work of Brooklyn, gutsy players that are playing really hard, and it's had a great season kind of from nowhere. They started 8-18 and here they are. But their offense, you know, they're outmanned and they shoot a lot of threes. And if they get hot with a three ball, that can keep them in it, but then that can take them right out of it. And there, I don't see that happening tonight at Philadelphia. Philadelphia is very invested with this series and very invested with beating this team and not letting down. And a win and a cover to me is likely in this game tonight, coming home after two impressive wins at Brooklyn. They won and covered both games. So I don't believe they're going to have any kind of a hang up here. Now, the Toronto series, I've been on Orlando in the series as the people have known. And I hit the first and third games. It laid off the second. So I was at Orlando. They went straight up game one, lay off game two. Okay. At Orlando, they cover game three at home. Then I had Orlando game four because I thought they could maybe win the game, and they got blown out. And that's now I'm getting off the train. I think Toronto's definitely going to win this series, and would not surprise me if they have a double-digit win tonight. They're favored 11.5. I'm just going to pass the game. Okay, then we go to Oklahoma City and Portland, and this series has cost me money. I was on Oklahoma City at Portland the first two games. I'm 0-2. So I come home. I kind of lay off, and I think Oklahoma City – come back and even the series, take it back. They win game three, and then game four, Portland has the big win over them. And Portland, they've done everything right in the series. Now they're coming home to close it out. And, you know, we've talked about this, Mike, team over talent. Portland has been the team, passed the ball, great character on that team, and Oklahoma City's a little bit questionable. Would you agree?
Yeah. I just think Portland's the better team. I think they're the better coach team. They've got the home field advantage or home court advantage. And I don't know if they'll end it tonight, but they're going to end it at some point in these next three games. They got two of them at home. And I don't think there's just enough intestinal fortitude here from Oklahoma City to be able to win three straight games. So the question is, do you jump on Portland at home tonight or do you wait?
Well, you could wait and see what happens and then take some value, take some points at Oklahoma City where they just won, or you could just say, look, they're at home. They won the first two. They're going to do it again tonight. The line opened 3.5. It's now 4. So the betting public, probably some professional money, has driven that up to 4. I will tell you one thing, after all the bickering going on between the two sides, I liked Damon Lillard's leadership. He says, we're not getting involved with the officials and we're not getting involved with Oklahoma City. We're just worried about us. And that's what we did in game four. So I think they responded to that game, those game three antics after the game. Oklahoma City won a game and then got real mouthy, and I thought that was bad.
Well, and that is the problem with OKC.
That is the problem with OKC and their leader. You know, their leader is he's like that, and you know, I'm not a big Westbrook fan, and you know, it is what it is. So, all in all, I'm going to stay away from the game tonight. But I do like the game, Mike. This is my top play in the NBA. We're going to go to the series that is tied 2-2, and it's really, unless something happens, really, really surprising. This is the only series where we could have an underdog or the lesser seed, the lower seed, win, and that still has an opportunity to happen and a good opportunity. San Antonio is going to Denver, and if you looked at all of the play in the first four games, San Antonio, how many quarters is that? 4, 8, 12, 16 quarters. They've probably won 13 of them.
Yeah.
San Antonio has been the better team overall, no doubt. They absolutely blew a game where they led for 3.5 quarters and were outscored like 14-1 in the last 4 minutes to drop one of the games. It was just kind of a fluky loss there at the very end. Jamal Murray went crazy. And then they come back and they win, have a big win at home, and then drop a game 4, you know, at home. And, you know, and it was a very surprising loss. And so now we go to game 5, we come back to Denver, and, you know, I'm on the Spurs tonight. I really like this team. Denver made a nice adjustment going into game 4, and their coach Malone started their best defensive player. They put in Craig, who's been a sub all year, a reserve. They put him in and paired him with Gary Harris, defending against San Antonio's backcourt.
Hey, did you know that Gary Harris was coached by Steve Risley?
I did. He's reminded us that about 10 times.
I'm doing that just in case Steve's listening so I can bust these balls a little bit. But go ahead.
The thing I like about that, Steve, he's got a great heart, and he just is really proud of the guy that he helped.
Yeah, you know, can't blame him either.
Can't blame him, you know, but he's let us know it just like his ring, you know, but that's okay. See, that's all right, man. When you coach and you're proud of your guys, especially when you got them at a youth age, you know, that's neat. But, you know, Denver has made a nice adjustment there, and now it's San Antonio's turn to make the adjustment. And I just think that, you know, San Antonio's a good money line play tonight, number one. Number two, the 5.5 is an outstanding value. This is a series that I can't even really say it's even. I think San Antonio is definitely, from a basketball standpoint, if you watch the tape, you watch the four games, they've been the superior team for most of the minutes. But we're sitting here 2-2. And this is a number two seed. But we talked about this, Mike. Denver limped into the playoffs. They were a false two. And whoever came in 7 was going to have a huge shot to win the series. And it's playing out. But 2-2, and Denver has the home court advantage. So, but I like San Antonio. You know, I like them. Mike Aldridge has a chance. He's their best player. And there was a big article I read on him yesterday. You know, he's their best player, but he plays with his back to the basket and doesn't really have the ball out like a lot of teams' best players and can control getting his shot. He just plays the team ball and can only do what he does. But what he does is pretty solid. You know, he had 24 points in 29 minutes the other night. And San Antonio's getting good backcourt play, coached superbly. The adjustments will be made that need to be made. And I just think it would be a shame for them if they drop this series. And the winner of game 5 has got to win it. So I like the Spurs tonight, much like I like the Leafs in game 5 before. So,
all right, Bobby, what do we got for on this day?
On this day, we have a neat one, baseball, and it's 1939, Boston Red Sox. Ed Williams hit his first home run on this day, April 23rd, 1939.
Yeah, and also I think you brought up the fact that, was it Hank Aaron hit his first home run on this exact same day a few years later?
Exact same day, 1954, Hank Aaron hit the first of his 755. So that's two of the best to ever play hit their
All
first
right.
home run.
So we'll talk Teddy Ballgame, who I think there's a case to be made was the greatest hitter of all time. And I think what I want to talk about is a 1941 season, because it's the last time anybody batted 400, which he hit, I think, 406 in 1941. But in spring training, Williams actually broke his right ankle that year, which limited him to just pinch hitting for the first 2 weeks of the season. And Bobby Doerr, who was a great player on that Red Sox team, later claimed that the injury was the foundation of Williams' season, as it forced him to put less pressure on his right foot for the rest of the year. And when you look at him also, the 1941 season wasn't just the year Ted Williams batted 406. It's also the same year that Joe DiMaggio had his, 56-game hitting streak? And
yeah,
they played the All-Star game in 1941, and Williams batted fourth behind DiMaggio, who was in the midst of that streak at that point, having 48 consecutive games where he'd hit in. So your number three hitter was Joe DiMaggio, and your number four hitter was Ted Williams in the All-Star game, and they were both in the middle of iconic seasons that will probably never be matched again. I don't know what your opinion is on this. I don't think anybody's ever going to hit in 56 straight games, and nobody's gotten close. I remember Pete Rose in 1978 when he broke the record of, what was it, Wee Willie Keeler or Tommy Holmes?
The National League record.
Right? Yeah, and he ended up 44. And the thing that was amazing to me is you play six games a week. For Pete Rose to even tie Joe DiMaggio's record, he would have had to hit in every game for two more weeks to be able to just tie that record. And I don't think anybody's ever going to bat over 400 again. And, of course, the great story with Williams on that was last game of the season, the manager for the Red Sox, Joe Cronin, offered to sit him out. And Williams declined. He played in a doubleheader that day, started the day off, I think, at 401 or 402. And he goes 6-for-8 and finishes at 406. Now, the thing that really was interesting to me when I looked at this was sacrifice flies were counted as at-bats in 1941. Under today's rules, Williams would have hit between 411 and 420 on today's rules. And from looking back at game accounts, I think most of the accounts I've seen had him batting somewhere between 415 and 420 if the sacrifice flyouts would have been taken away. The other interesting thing is about him, most great hitters, what people look at is the amount of hits they had. So, like, you're an automatic Hall of Famer if you've had 3,000 hits. Okay. Even with a 344 batting average, 521 home runs, he ended up with, 2,654 hits. And the reason for that was you had the 43, 44, and 45 seasons. He was actually in the military, volunteered for World War II, which is why he didn't get the 3,000 hits.
Right, right. Yeah, and he was only short 3,000 hits by how many? What did he wind up with?
He ended up, 346 short. So in 3 years, in 2 years, he would have got that at the rate he was hitting.
No doubt.
And I always have people tell me, well, Pete Rose is the greatest hitter of all time. I mean, we're talking about a man with a 344 batting average, over 1,800 RBIs, 521 home runs, on-base percentage of 48.2%. The only thing he failed at was being a manager with the Washington Senators and the Texas Rangers. But he was a 19-time All-Star. He won the Triple Crown twice. I mean, when's the last time we had a Triple Crown winner? Was it Carl Yastrzemski in 67?
I think so. Yeah,
I think it was. It's been 50 years since anybody did what this guy did twice. He won six batting titles. And the thing that was impressive to me by looking at it here is this. His first one he won in 1941. His last one he won in 1958. That's 17 years apart. And not just being the batting champion, he was the American League home run champion four times, RBI leader four times. And I think his career on base percentage of 48% is still number one all time. He was named in a Major League Baseball All-Century team, and the thing I remember about that was at 1999, the All-Star game, where they had all those guys come out. He comes out in a golf cart, and every one of those guys just flocked to Ted Williams.
Yeah, they all were around him. Was that around the pitching area? It was right in the middle of the diamond, right?
Yeah, I think they, took him on a cruise around the outfield to wave at everybody, and then they stopped there. Tony Gwynn was about to break his neck to get out there and say hi to him. Yeah, he was a first ballot Hall of Famer, got 94% of the vote, which back then was damn near unheard of. And then I think his final at bat was a home run, wasn't it?
I think it was. You know, I think he hit a home run. You can research that and find it, I believe. And that's just a fairy tale ending. And you know why I had thought I remembered that was because, you know, Bob Knight was a friend of his. And they used to enjoy fishing together. Is that correct?
Yeah.
And I remember reading an article that Bob Knight was involved with, talking about Ted Williams and how what a treasure of a man he was and the stories and everything else. And then I think I remember reading it in that article that he his last at bat was a home run. And, you know, just amazing. Just amazing. And this guy, you know, the 3 years that he volunteered to go into the military and gave up those 3 years and right at prime of his, you know, of his career, and unbelievable person.
Yeah. And it's really special. Your last at bat is a home run there. And I mean, the thing that stood out to me about that is I know how special that is because one of the greatest nights of my life was Johnny Bench Night, which was September 17th, 1983. The Reds are playing the Astros. And I remember my dad used to work as a construction worker. He owned his own construction company. And there was a place called Aurora Lumber here in Aurora, Indiana. And whenever he wanted tickets, they would give him tickets. And their seats were like blue seats right behind home plate. Seats were great. But I remember when they announced Johnny Bench Night, they were using those tickets because it was Johnny Bench Night. But if you were a season ticket holder, you got to have so many extra tickets if you wanted them. And my dad got those tickets for me and him to go. And Johnny Bench was both our favorite baseball player, you know, that ever walked the face of the earth. And I remember going to that game. And actually, I can look on my wall now and still see the certificate they gave out that's got our ticket stub there from September 17th, 1983, and I remember in the third inning, he came up his second at bat, and we were sitting in the upper deck down the left field line, probably right perpendicular next to third base, and he hit a line shot down the left field line, and it went basically right by us, the thing sizzling down the line. And he hits the home run. You look at Bench. He's got he's got his fist raised in the air with the number one. He runs around the bases. And I think he may have batted one more time. They took him out in the fifth inning. I think maybe he walked in the other one. But, I mean, when I look back at my childhood, I went to a lot of games with my dad, Reds games, Bengals games, stuff like that. I saw World Series games. I saw AFC Championship games with my dad. But no night was as special as that night because what that player meant to both of us and the fact that I'm in the eighth grade, ninth grade, and I'm standing there next to my dad watching Johnny Bench round those bases.
Yeah. Mike, that's what it's all about, you know, family and sports, and sports, you know, brings us all together, and those memories, you know. I went with my dad, and I saw Rod Carew's 3,000th hit. It was at Angel Stadium. It was against Frank Viola. It was a left-handed pitcher, and he hit a line drive single to left field against the Twins. And I'll never forget that. We tried to see Reggie Jackson's 500th home run.
I've heard this story so many times. You saw every home run Reggie Jackson ever hit except for that one.
Yeah, 499. 501 and 502, or we missed it. Darn it! I mean, we couldn't get there. But you know, and baseball just has a way of doing that. I don't know. At least it did back in our day, Mike. We're about the same age, and I think it still does with kids. You know, now there's.
I don't think it does because there's not many players like a Johnny Bench or a Ted Williams that stays with the same team his entire career.
True. That is true, you know. But we got one here in Southern California. Mike Trout just signed that big deal, and he's going to be.
He ain't going nowhere because he just made like $1 billion.
Exactly. And so there's a lot of young fans in Orange County, Los Angeles, Southern California area that are going to have those same feelings with their dad.
10, 12 years from now. And it's special, you know. But anyhow, yeah, that's really neat. I, as you said, he walked. I wish he would have just maybe just bowed out after hitting that home run. That would have been cool to finish just like Ted Williams.
The Astros won, though. But
oh,
but I believe his last at bat was in Houston at the Astrodome. I think he pinch hit on like the last game of the season, and I think he got a single. I'm not 100% sure, but I do remember that was 1983. The Reds were bad in 83. They were better than what they were in 82, but it was right before they finally started to turn the franchise back around. And I'm pretty sure he came up and got a single in his last at bat. I don't remember if they won that game or not, but hell, to tell you how bad it was, I used to actually listen to the games on the radio, and I had a scorebook I'd keep scoring.
And I remember doing that for UCLA basketball, believe it or not, putting the field goals down and the free throws and making my own scorebook. I didn't have a
scorebook. Sam Gilbert take care of you for doing that?
I wish he would have. Yeah, this was when Larry Brown was the coach, 1980, I believe. I would have been 11 years old.
Okay, the team that went to the national championship game.
Yeah, that's right. They lost to Louisville. But, yeah, so, you know, we sounds like we had a lot of the same upbringing. And, you know, hey, it's good, Mike. And Ted Williams doesn't get much better than talking about him for 10 minutes. And little update, the Tigers have tied the Red Sox, so we're in the bottom of the fifth. That first game is 2-2.
Alrighty. But we're going to go ahead and wrap it up. I want to remind everybody, me and Mr. Sheridan will be back tomorrow at 2 o'clock to help everybody make some money, hopefully. So make sure you don't forget Thursday night, the Grueling Truth NFL Draft Show live. At 7 o'clock, I believe it is, Eastern Time. You can find us on the Zeno Live Radio app. You can find us on the Grueling Truth app. You can get on the iTunes Store. Or you can hear us live on Spreaker. Or you just go to thegruelingtruth.com. We will also be tweeting during the night. And we'll tweet the show out probably every hour. So if you want to go to Twitter and follow us at Grueling Truth, you will be able to just click the click there and listen to the show there. We're going to go ahead and wrap the show up. I want to remind everybody you can hear us on iTunes, iHeart, Spotify, Spreaker, Stitcher, Zeno Live Radio, and 150 other places you can find podcasts that I'm not going to sit here and name because this show will take 5.5 hours. So for Bobby Sheridan, I'm Mike Goodpaster. You've been listening to The Grueling Truth, where the legends speak.
An MBA from a globally recognized and celebrated business school is achievable on your terms. Find your fit among the Kellogg School of Management's innovative portfolio of MBA programs, including one-year, two-year, part-time, joint degree, and executive options. Wherever you are in your career and your life, there's a Kellogg program designed to help you succeed. Visit kellogg.northwestern.edu/MBA.
This is firefighter Rafael Porriette for Firehouse Subs. Introducing new Firehouse Pairs. Pair your favorite small sub with a signature side like the awesome 5-Cheese Mac and Cheese. And remember, a portion of every purchase at Firehouse Subs goes towards helping first responders. Firehouse Subs. Enjoy more subs. Save more lives. Participating locations only. Firehouse Subs will donate a minimum of $1 million in 2019 to the Firehouse Subs Public Safety Foundation by donating 0.11% of every purchase.